8:14 on this Wednesday morning, January 14th. Wednesday's the day at this time we generally take a deep dive into crime with former NOPD Superintendent Ronald Surpass, head of the Nashville State Police at one point, head of the Nashville City Police, Washington State Police, now a professor practicing in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola. If you watch TV during the day, he'll pop on occasionally if something happens on CNN or one of the major networks about as a consultant about stuff that's happening. How you doing, Chief?
Tommy, I'm great. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, I wanted to talk to you about, I was coming to work this morning about 4:30, coming down Camp Street by Julia, a little bit past Julia, heading toward the bridge, toward Calliope. That's how you say it, right?
Calliope.
No, bro, it's Calliope. Come on. And I noticed three National Guard officers walking, and they were the only ones out there. And I got to thinking about, well, let's see, Tommy, how do you feel about that? And I got to thinking about a couple of different things. First of all, they're not hurting anything, certainly. Then I got to thinking about how much it costs for them to be there. I got to thinking about how it is a presence if there would be somebody, a ne'er-do-well that was up to no good. Then I got to thinking about the National Guard themselves being away from their families and at what price they were. I got a lot of different thoughts going through my mind at 4:30 in the morning as I saw these guys. At no point, it may have been a woman I didn't look at closely, at no point did it upset me or bother me. Tell me your thoughts on the National Guard and so forth.
Well, over these last 45 years, Tommy, every year I was in the New Orleans Police Department, the National Guard had came out to help the city of New Orleans recover from hurricanes, present Mardi Gras, present Super Bowls, Final Four, Sugar Bowls. So essentially, the ugly, twisting head of politics has once again invaded something that's been used for decades to help make people safe. Mm-hmm. It's always in this conversation, Tommy, to me, it's just one political lens wants to see it in one way and have their persons believe them, and another one wants to see it in another way. But rest assured that the National Guard was called up for the RNC and the DNC conventions to help provide safety for the police officers to go do the more critical police functions. They do traffic stop. They do food service during major events and crises. It's actually, Tommy, there's nothing new here.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only reason I was wondering that the questions that popped into my mind are, okay, if they see something about to happen or happening, mm-hmm. what do they do? What's their role? And again, I don't mean as chief. Look, I don't mean this from a negative standpoint, because it didn't bother me at all. If anything, it was comforting that they were there. I just wonder about the costs and at what cost. Nothing's free, right? Does it happen? These people are taken away from their families, blah, 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 et cetera. Go ahead.
Absolutely. My response wasn't to be contrary with you. My response is, police are often thrust in the middle of these raging political debates that often have little reality to what's on the ground. Think of COVID. COVID became a police problem because some political leadership wanted police to arrest people who weren't wearing masks. That made a public health problem a police problem. So to your question, I would bet without doubt in my mind that if three National Guard members were walking on any street in New Orleans in the middle of the night, that had been part of a plan coordinated with the New Orleans Police Department. And therefore, they would have likely very instant communication abilities to radio and say, hey, we see something suspicious here. Secondly, we know that police deterrence during any time, the visibility of a deterrent factor helps. Tommy, I've said this before, and I'm sure I'll be criticized. Criminals are cowards. The planning criminal who wants to create havoc is looking for signs of authority figures, is looking for signs of video cameras, is looking for signs of witnesses. They are cowards. They sneak around in
the
middle of the day.
To avoid them, not to confront them, to avoid them, right?
Exactly. So they're looking. So there is a value, I think, to either a police officer in uniform or perhaps a guard member in uniform, perhaps a firefighter in uniform. In other words, anybody who represents authority, they're going to spot them and say, well, I'm going to go around a corner. Now, some would argue that's just playing whack-a-mole, which corner to be on. However, the point is, what happened in your mind is exactly what you would want to happen, that you saw something that looked like some level of authority that made you at least look. That's good.
Three of them together, that's for their safety, I would presume, as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Police officers in those kind of circumstances will normally be walking in group of two. At a minimum, Bourbon Street, you know, I walked on Bourbon Street in the early 80s, Tommy, and we were supposed to be paired up. Often we weren't. But you want to be at least two officers, or in this case, they make group in three as a part of their protocols.
Well, you're so big, you're your own mounted unit. Let's be honest about that. You're like 6'9", and you know whatever. So, no, but seriously, so that's why three of them. And to be clear, these are people that signed up for duty. That's part of the in exchange for the benefits that they receive. They could be called up, and that's what's happening here. Correct.
I would think that's absolutely the case, and oftentimes during Mardi Gras, you know, I only did 25 of them, nine mm-hmm. as the chief or the deputy chief. Oftentimes we will have activated military reservist units who are military police, not, for all the audience, not to perform police functions, but because they have a little better understanding of how policing works. So common. We used to get them from the San Francisco Marine Detachment, and they were the greatest individuals we ever worked with. They did not want to be police. They were not police, but they had a different level of training being military police. See the distinction? If they weren't police.
You know what? Let me take a break here. Police. I want to pick it up right there when you come back, because that resonated with me. They are not police, and they don't want to be police. And I think it all goes to perception and you know, we see somebody in a National Guard uniform, and maybe somebody thinks one thing. That's not what the person in the National Guard uniform is thinking to begin with. And it seems to me we're just talking about having eyes on the ground and intelligence and surveillance just to prevent anything that's going on. And what really resonated was when you said part of a plan, you would presume, where you see anything looks suspicious, you call it in, and then from there it goes to NOPD and they take care of it. 821, more when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 826 now, talking to Ronald Surpass, our friend, professor, practice Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, now a consultant to numerous departments. I brought up the National Guard because I happened to see three National Guardsmen, guardspeople, I don't know what the gender was, of the people that were walking down Camp Street this morning early at about 4:30. They were the only people out there, but maybe that's because they were the only people out there. That's why there was nobody else out there. Chief, you mentioned something before the break that I thought was notable, and that's that they don't want to be the police. And people that think that you know, again, you talk about the political thought here that this is this armed battalion coming in to take over. That's not what's going on in these people's mind, at least from your experience, right?
No, sir, not at all. When you meet with the Guard, there are young men and women who are dedicated to service. Their assignment is to assist the New Orleans Police Department and, more importantly, the city of New Orleans. See the distinction there? It's not just the police department. It's the city of New Orleans that says, yes, we need you during Mardi Gras, Super Bowl, Sugar Bowl, unexpected events, hurricanes, floods. That's when they do their best job. They come and they do what the police department asks them to do. And it's a valuable, valuable relationship for at least the 50 years almost I'm in this work.
I get texts from about this every time we talk about National Guard. Yeah, but the weapons aren't loaded. Again, just your thoughts on that, please.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions of what they actually do. And our friends in leadership on either side of the equation don't help the general public when they politicize what they want their answer to be versus just talk about the facts. I've always come to expect and believe, and I'm sure you do in your business, the public is a whole lot more attuned and aware of things than some would believe. So I think people really understand what's happening.
So what happens if they, for example, witness a carjacking or they see a carjacking happening? Are they empowered to intervene? Do they just call it in? What is the plan? Do you know?
It starts to dance on the pinhead of a law, but any citizen can interrupt a crime to protect another citizen. That's just as old as we are as a nation. They cannot exercise a law enforcement authority. Now, the question of whether or not they can exercise a citizen authority takes a little bit of thinking through the circumstance, but generally it's going to be call the police right away, just like a citizen would. But Tommy, rest assured, if you were walking there this morning and you saw someone being assaulted at 4:30 in the morning and you decided to help, you could help and you would be legally fine helping to protect someone who can't protect themselves.
So it's not a disadvantage that they're wearing the uniform?
I don't think so. I think it's more of an advantage of visibility like we talked about at the beginning. And that is a very powerful component.
As far as them wanting to help, to get involved in helping, they have their rights as a citizen even though they're wearing a uniform, right?
Yeah, it comes down to the technicality of enforcing law, but helping citizens is something we all have a right to do.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time as always. Ronald Surpass, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent. Saw a text this morning, morning time, a cab driver. Saw around 2 a.m. this morning, two National Guard members. Talked with the driver on 800 St. Louis Street and later NOPD and state troopers. So what is your thought about it? Are you seeing the National Guard walking around, and what are your thoughts on it? Because I really did get to thinking about it, about the different aspects and angles and so forth, and it didn't bother me. And again, if it's eyes and ears on the ground, what can it hurt, right? And I do think the chief is right. I don't think they come in thinking that they want to be the police. These are just guys and women that signed up for National Guard duty, as I understand it. In exchange for certain benefits and certain rights, or just to serve the country, and this is part of it. We'll take a break and back talk to Cokey Riley about LSU. He's the LSU beat writer for The Advocate. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 8:45, quarter till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Cokey Riley, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. You can follow him on Twitter at Kokiriley, which of course would be his name, and that's why that's his Twitter handle. How you doing, Cokey?
Doing pretty well. How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm seeing this tweet that I watch more tape of what I'd already seen from Sam Levitt, and then wrote a story about his game, and I didn't have a chance to watch the tweet, but I'd love to hear about it if you don't mind sharing some of it with us. What did you see about Sam Levitt?
Yeah, so with Levitt, you're looking at a very mobile quarterback who is very comfortable making plays off script, outside of the structure of the offense and the play that's sort of intended to be called. He likes to freelance quite a bit, mm-hmm. so to say, and he can sort of pair that with a very strong arm, an NFL-caliber arm, to say the least, and you kind of have those two attributes, and those are two pretty important attributes for a lane-given offense. Lane-given offenses are very structured, well-structured. They're very scripted. But Levitt kind of brings his own aspect to that offense to create a little bit more variability. And he has the arm strength to access throws to all sides of the field. And his accuracy can wane and wax a little bit on shorter throws, medium, intermediate throws. But I think mechanically he is everything you kind of need to be a little bit more consistent with that side of his game. It's more about, you know, cleaning up and polishing some things here and there. So I think overall this is a quarterback who could be one of the best quarterbacks in the country next year. The biggest question mark, though, easily, is his foot injury and how that heals heading into the next season.
Mm-hmm. But at Liz Frank, tell me what you know about Liz Frank injuries, just from athletes past that have had them.
Yeah, it's typically known as a pretty tricky injury, and it's one that needs to be taken care of very carefully in order for it to fully heal. And I'm having trouble coming up with an exact example.
An athlete, it's the kind of thing, Cokey, that has a frivolous name, but it's anything but frivolous. It's like something to do with the metatarsal in the foot. But if you don't get on this and treat it right from the beginning, it's the kind of thing that can bother you for the rest of your career. Am I right in that?
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's just a very, very tricky injury, and it hasn't been 100% confirmed. That's the exact injury that Levitt got.
Okay.
But that's been the rumored, reported, whatever you want to call it. That's what it is. So if that's what it is, and that's my guess is what it is, then that's very, very tricky. And if that is the case, then he almost certainly won't be able to do anything in spring ball. That hasn't been fully rolled out yet, but it's pretty important for like a new quarterback with a whole bunch of with all new receivers that he's working with at a new place to get some work in during the spring. And now it doesn't really seem like that's going to happen.
That was my next question to you. If it doesn't happen, does it change anything when LSU starts their season?
It's going to mean more work for Landon Clark and whoever the other scholarship quarterback they get is, which actually might not be a terrible thing for LSU, and just seeing what they got in Clark or seeing what they got in whoever the other quarterback they get is, whether that's Ryan Staub, a Colorado transfer who may be visiting pretty soon, or Hussein Longstreet, who came onto campus just before they got Levitt's commitment and is a former five-star recruit. So I guess that's the only real benefit of it. But you'd still much rather have your star quarterback that you're paying millions of dollars for to get his reps in within the new offense and with the new receivers that he's working with. I think like building that chemistry, understanding the system on the field in real time, those are kind of invaluable reps. And given the pressures that will be on LSU heading into next season, given the amount of money that they're spending on everything, the coaching staff, the players, all of it, I feel like that's very, very important.
The reason I asked that is when you said freelance, my eyebrow went up a little bit because that can be a good thing, that can be a bad thing. Then you said very structured offense with Lane Kiffin. Does he keep that freelancing under control, and will that freelancing ability maybe help him if he does miss spring? Well, he is going to miss spring practice.
Yeah, so like in every offense, I don't want to confuse people too much when I say that, because in every offense there's a play in the huddle, right? And sometimes that play is changed at the line of scrimmage depending on what the defense is doing. And as the play unravels, sometimes your first and second option isn't open, and sometimes you just kind of need to scramble out of the pocket and do something, right? You've seen Patrick Mahomes do this. You'll see Josh Allen do it all the time. Like Lamar Jackson is kind of famous for this. A lot of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, a lot of the best quarterbacks in college football can kind of make these plays that look like they're totally off script. And a lot of that has to do with you have to be mobile in order to do it. And you have to be willing to make plays off platform where you're throwing the ball with your body contorted in all these different ways, and you're throwing on the run, and you're making a very athletic, instinctual sort of play. And that is one of Levitt's great strengths, is that he can extend a play with his legs, he can scramble for extra yards, he can make throws on the run, on the move, to really all parts of the field because of his arm strength. And that's definitely a strength in this game. Sometimes he can get a little bit too wild or get a little bit too aggressive in throwing a ball into a window that isn't really there. But for the most part, I think that's a good thing, especially when you're in an offense like the Lane Kiffin offense. That's when I say it's very structured and very well structured. It means that, there's a lot of, you can get to a lot of options pretty easily and pretty simply, as we saw with Trinidad Chambliss this year, where it just felt like they could get 5 yards or 10 yards anytime they wanted to. And sometimes if you're facing a really great defense, they do a good job of sort of shutting that stuff down. So if you have a quarterback who can sort of create out of structure, off script a little bit, it adds another element to that offense. You kind of see that with the Niners. Like the Niners have a really well-constructed offense, but they have a quarterback who can sort of make plays out of nothing in Brock Purdy, and that's sort of helped their attacks if he's been the starting quarterback.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Sounds like he has a plan after he gets punched in the mouth, to paraphrase Mike Tyson. 8:52 traffic now, WWL. 8:58, 2 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Back with Cokie Riley, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. Let's talk about the rest of the roster, transfer portal, how it's looking, running backs, et cetera. Cokie?
Yeah, I mean, running back, just to sort of summarize and start, bringing back Caden Durham, who entered the transfer portal, is pretty big. It means you're bringing back your top two rushers from last season. I think the expectation heading into the portal season was that you're probably going to lose one of those guys, and Frank Wilson was going to return, and Frank Wilson didn't return with Ole Miss. So I think when you got that, you have your top two backs, and then they've been able to fill out the room with some other guys, Rod Ganey, Racine Guillory, Dylan Jones from Wisconsin. Those three guys are going to be put in as depth pieces and good pieces to the system that they have. Offensive line has been kind of the biggest question mark, though, when it comes to really the whole roster, because the rest of this team is close to being filled out, close to being finished. They've added 9 receivers from the transfer portal. They've plugged in some holes on the defensive side of the ball. But the offensive line is really the question mark right now, because, they got to replace four starters potentially. They'll have two guys coming back. They lost a lot of the depth that they once had as well. They've added three offensive linemen from the portal, but that's not going to be enough. They're going to have to add another two, three, four, potentially even more.
Thank you, Cokie.
Guys from the portal.
Thank you, sir. Out.